This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant. And around here, we get rid of the BS. Game-changing women, raw stories, real truth about what it takes to lead, win, and stay sane in the process. If you've ever had to fight for your seat at the table, this space is for you. This is Now Media Television. Welcome to Be Better Than Your BS. Life and business are about more than titles and wins. They're about how you show up and the culture you create around you. Sports taught me that early. Discipline, teamwork, and knowing how to pivot under pressure. And that's why I do this show. I'm Risha Grant, the People's Champ, and I'm here to bring you real conversations with leaders, change makers, and everyday people who are shaping culture in a powerful way. My guest today is Natalia Williams, the Senior Manager of People and Culture at a major makeup brand. She's a passionate HR leader who knows how to balance the creative energy of a global brand with the systems and strategies that keep people thriving. From hiring and onboarding to shaping culture and engagement, she's built her career on making sure people feel seen and supported, all while partnering with leadership to drive results. This is a conversation about agility, authenticity, and the power of building a culture that lasts. Welcome, Natalia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We have had the opportunity to work together this year, and it's been such a pleasure to be able to do that. And in the position you're in, I thought you would be great to just talk to us about culture and leadership. And every journey has a starting point. So let's rewind and just talk about where it all began for you. Can you walk me through how you got started and really got into leadership and even into HR?
Yeah, so I had no idea that the plan was going to be HR after college. I graduated, didn't know what I wanted to do, and immediately started working at Enterprise. And so I was just renting cars, and my sister worked for a company that had an entry-level HR position open up. And it just kind of made sense. It seemed like I already had a lot of like the soft skills to be an HR person. So being able to experience like an entry-level role that I feel like would potentially introduce me to a whole new career path was exciting. And so that's how I kind of got into it.
And did you already like people? Because here's the thing about HR. You have to deal with people. There's no way around that.
Yeah, I think I have a natural empathy for people. So I think in that sense, it was natural that I would kind of like find my way in HR. I think that in HR, you have to have that like nice balance of like being able to be strategic, be a professional, but then also being able to connect with people from different backgrounds. Yes. I think naturally that's just something that I was able to do.
So were you always, or what did you major in? Let me ask that. What did you major in college?
So I went to college wanting to be a veterinarian. Started taking those science classes and was like, oh, this is not for me. So then I pivoted and majored in sociology and minored in Spanish, but not with any idea of what I actually wanted to do with that.
And that's why I ask, because so many times I talk to people and it's like they majored in being a veterinarian and then they just show up and they're doing HR. And I'm always wondering about that path. Like what happens? Like, did you just science? Like, no.
I think so. I graduated high school early. So I graduated in 3 years. And so I started college when I was 16 and immediately went to UCLA. So I think I just was not prepared to be in these like super rigorous courses where it's like they have a 10-week system. So you have to like all your classes are like completed within 10 weeks. So within 3 weeks, you're doing midterms. And I think that just at that age and like coming from the school I came from, I don't think I was prepared to be able to excel in those courses at the speed that I had to do it. And so I think just after a while of like not really getting good grades, I was like, okay, let me just pivot and do something else.
Well, and I have to ask, what is it like being on a college campus at 16? Because you can't do anything. You don't get to party. You don't get to drink.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like I'm still having my parents need to like sign permission slips for certain things. And I had like friends or family members that were older than me, but still in high school, able to do certain things that I couldn't. So that was weird, but I was just so thankful for my parents to not allow fear to keep me from being able to like take that big step.
Yeah, I love that because I can't imagine being 16 around, you know, young adults. So what were the values in your upbringing that shaped how you approach culture today?
I would say so. I grew up in both of my parents are believe in God, and so I think that was like a foundation for my upbringing. And so I grew up going to church. I grew up really like infused in like my culture and my family, and so I think that that really informed the way that I just like saw the world and just helped me as a young person going into college. Like it just helped me not to go in there and just go wild. I feel like I had a really good like just support system and good just morals going in.
That was okay, helpful. So I have to ask you this. If because some people go the complete opposite way, right? You're raised in church and in faith. And I can say this because my dad's a PK. He's a preacher's kid and he was wild. So what was the difference for you in staying grounded through that versus wilding out at college at 16?
So I'm not a PK, and I think that probably helps because I was forced. Like, it wasn't that God was forced on me.
Right.
I think it was just a natural part of our lives. And at a young age, I just, like, had my own personal desire to follow God. So I feel like it'd be different if, like, I was, like, it being oppressed or, like, if my parents were, like, shoving it down my throat and then I had to go to school and experience something completely new. It was already something natural that I wanted for myself. So when I got to college, I actually joined Christian clubs, and it was just something that I wanted to do.
Okay. That definitely makes a difference. So what was your mindset stepping into your very first leadership role? Confident, nervous?
I would say I experienced like really big imposter syndrome for sure. I think I'm always used to just being the youngest many times in rooms. And that can just get to you when you feel like there's potential for people to doubt you or overlook you. I'm also shorter. I'm also an Afro-Latina. And so I feel like all of those things caused me to have like certain imposter syndromes when I was in rooms with people that were older than me, that didn't look like me, and that just had different backgrounds than me. And so I feel like I've just been in this constant pursuit of like overcoming the idea that I don't belong in the space.
So how do you find your voice in that space? Because I remember starting my business and being one of the youngest people, and I remember being in rooms and in boardrooms where I was the only person that looked like myself, and it's stifling. It's stifling. So how did you find your voice?
I think I learned to listen, and I think instead of just feeling like I have something to prove, like I am learning, and there's so many people to learn from just throughout my career, throughout my life. And so just listening and watching them intently, seeing how they handle conversations, seeing how they just maneuver in rooms, I think gave me just the confidence to be able to like, okay, I'm going to follow this roadmap. I see what these people are doing and I see the results that they're getting. Mm-hmm. And so I think the first step was just watching, listening, and then just having that confidence.
And did you have a mentor? Did you have someone who said, speak up, girl, you have something to say. Don't be shy. Go do this.
I didn't have like an official mentor, but I didn't have an official mentor, but I do have parents and family and friends that are very encouraging and that speak life into me. So it allows me to come in those rooms and just take up space.
And it's super important to have people to speak life into you. I love that you said that because it's so easy. I'm so big on watching my words and watching the things that I say and the things that I put out into the world. And so I think it's super important to have someone. And then not only you have that person, but you're putting it back into other people as well.
Yes.
100%. So before you stepped into leadership, what personal BS did you have to push past to even see yourself as a leader?
To be able to see myself as a leader, I think that I had to stop coming from a mindset of like automatically people are seeing me and having a certain like thought about me that's negative. I think I had to just tell myself that I belonged in the room as much as anyone else in that room. But then also to not just automatically ascribe, like I see a certain type of people, a person, so I just assume that they're thinking a certain type of thing. And so as much as I'm trying to be open about the way I see myself, being open about the way that I see other people was also a process.
Yeah, I love that. Because it really always comes back to us, to who we are, to what the mindset is that we're carrying with us every day, because there's always going to be something that that keeps us stumbling, that trips us up. So very quickly here, when you think about the person you were at the start of your career, how different is your mindset now?
I feel like I am so much more confident. I'm so much more ready to have the hard conversations. I'm so much more patient with myself. and gracious when I make mistakes, whereas before it would just feel like the end of the world. And now I'm just like, it will be fine. It'll all be fine.
I love that. So I've come to the big age of 51. And I got to tell you, when you hit 50, you don't care about anything. Yeah. You are like, yes, you're ready. Like, you won't smoke, bring it. I'm yeah. ready. But I, for so much of my career, I am my biggest critic. I am my biggest yeah. critic. And so there's always something, you could have said this better, you could have did this better. And I'm really like, it's a work in progress to get to that that space yeah. of saying, you did good. Have compassion for yourself. So important yeah. that we have compassion. Give me one lesson from your background, a personal journey that still drives the way you lead today.
I would say thinking before I speak. Mm. Always taking a beat. I think that I've had many moments where I've had to rethink on a conversation, like, oh, I wish I didn't say that, or I wish yes. I would have thought about it longer. And I never regret taking a moment to think.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big lesson. It's just, especially in HR, things can get like muddied really quickly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, taking a second to think.
I love that. Well, y'all, we will be right back. Up next, Natalia shares the bold moves and pivots that took her from HR beginnings to leading people and strategy for a global beauty brand.
Hold up, we're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS, right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant, and around here, we get rid of the BS.
Welcome back to Be Better Than Your BS. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Be Better Than Your BS and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm here with Natalia Williams, Senior Manager of People and Culture for a major makeup brand. In this segment, we're talking about the bold career pivots and defining moves that changed the course of her journey and what it really takes to lead culture inside one of the world's most creative industries. Every journey has that one bold move, that pivot, that play that takes things to the next level. So let's talk about yours. You are now the Senior Manager of People and Culture at a major makeup brand. How did that opportunity come about?
So I had my entry-level HR job that started my whole path in HR. And then from there, they paid for me to get a certificate of HR from LMU. And so I did that, and that kind of like made me start thinking about, what if I actually made a career out of this? And then from there, I decided to apply for USC's master's program in HR management. It was a quick one-year virtual program. I got in and decided, and so halfway through that, I decided to quit my job and just like go full in on like focusing on getting this master's. And then from there, I started looking for jobs, and I basically found this job that I'm working in now through, I think it was like Indeed or LinkedIn at the time. Didn't know what I was applying for. It was mm-hmm. through like a recruiting company. And they connected me with the company I work for now, had no idea what it was. Never really worked in that like true like beauty brand makeup space. But I started off as like a part-time recruitment coordinator. And then from there, was able to get promoted to being full-time as a manager and now senior manager of People and Culture.
So let me ask you, were you ever like a big makeup person? Are you a big makeup person anyway?
No. So before I started working in makeup, I was the friend that never wore makeup.
Okay.
I would like do my eyebrows or something, and then that would just be it. It wasn't until I started working here that I got into it and then kind of got pretty good at it. And now it's like something that I actually truly enjoy doing.
I wish I could say I enjoyed putting on makeup, but it feels yeah. like a chore. And mm-hmm. I was always a girl that wore eyeliner because, for one, my mom mm-hmm. only let me wear eyeliner till yeah. a certain point. And as I started making the career moves, I had to wear more and more makeup. Like, I could have makeup last me for 2 years. Now it's lasting me for 6 months.
Yeah,
right. So I was, I am not. And now I've learned how to do my makeup where I don't need a makeup mm-hmm. person. But mm-hmm. if I don't have a meeting, if I don't have, and I've even started skirting meetings now. where I put my glasses on, maybe it doesn't look that bad. Yeah. Now I want to wear makeup. So how do you balance the creative energy of a makeup brand with the structure and systems of that HR requires? Because it seems like it's just such a fun industry, and HR is really all the rules and regs. So how do you make it work?
It's tough. I'm off anytime I'm like out at any event with a company, they're always like, oh, Natalia's there. Like, Natalia's here. HR's here. It's so hard because we really encourage people to be able to show up as themselves, be free, be outspoken. But obviously that's to a point. And so I think creating systems as we go, sometimes you don't even know what type of like parameters you need until you get there, especially with a startup. So for me, it's just been like a lot of times it's like, oh, this incident happened. So now this informs a rule or policy that we need to put in place. And sometimes getting those policies to stick are pretty hard, but it's helpful to clue people into the why you need to do certain things, whether it's to protect the company, to protect the employees or whatnot. So yeah.
Do you think people don't speak as freely when you're around? Because I know I've worked with so many companies, and I worked with the NBA team, and it was so funny to me because I'm talking to these professional basketball players in a room where HR is, and nobody's saying anything. Then we get out in the hall, and they're telling me all this stuff. They're like, HR, our checks are in. Those people write our checks. I'm like, you're a major NBA player. What do you mean? Do you still get that?
I think that I always say like HR can be a lonely job because nobody feels like, you know, there's this whole myth around like you can't trust HR, and I get it, but it can definitely be a lonely job when you come in the room, everyone's like being weird. And I'm like, I'm just a girl.
So tell me honestly, what is HR's role in the company? Like, let's make that plain for people. What is HR's role?
Yeah, so there's the strategic component. So you're partnering with upper management to be able to roll out policies, to be able to help them structure different things. But then there's also the people component of it. And so recently we've rebranded an HR. Now at my company, at the very least, it's called People and Culture because we do want it to seem a little less like rigid. But there is that, like, you're kind of in that awkward space where it's like, my responsibility is to the company, but I also, especially me personally, feel like I have a responsibility to the people. And so you're constantly in the middle trying to balance the two.
And do you really take direction from people? Like, you know, we talk a lot in the field that I've been in. We talk a lot about being able to partner with HR as an employee, as a singular person coming in saying, Natalia, I'm having these problems. Can you help me? Can we come up with a solution? Is that something that, because, you know, I advise people to do this, but is that something that actually that HR people actually would embrace?
Yeah, it's something I definitely embrace. And it's like actually my favorite part of the job. Like, I love when people feel comfortable enough to come to me and say, hey, I'm having this issue. Hey, I have to have this hard conversation with my manager. How do I go about that? Or I've been in this uncomfortable position. What do I do? I think that's my favorite part. And that's like half of what I do here.
I love it. What's one bold decision you made in your career that turned out to be a turning point?
I would definitely say getting my master's in HR. I feel like that was me like making a declaration that I was going to go full force into HR. It was obviously the financial component of like investing in HR, but I think it also helped me just level up and be in a space with other HR people who are in pursuit of the same thing.
So it made you feel ready to step into that role. Yeah. Love it. What's the most exciting part about leading people strategy in the beauty industry? Like, there's so many things I can think of, but from your perspective.
I think being able to work with the people that are behind the products that are so amazing. I think when you work for a company where you actually believe in what we're putting out and the way that we're putting it out, I think has been exciting. So I'm working with so many creatives, so many people who, and being creative, their minds like just work a little bit differently. Yeah. So I think it's been fun to like be on the inside of that and also to be a support for those people. A lot of times creatives are good at being creative, but then when it comes to like the 9-to-5 office work, it's a little just more like not as like natural for them. And so being able to like help them through that process has been exciting.
So let's talk about leadership for a second, because leadership is hard. We were talking about this a little bit before. Like, leadership is not easy, especially in the world today. Yeah. I think more than any other time in my life, things they just seem crazy everywhere. How do you lead through this time? How do you stay consistent for your employees, for the people that are coming in every day dealing with so many things that are happening around us?
Yeah, I think that when I think of leadership, I approach it in the way that I want to be lead is the way that I try to lead. And so I think being consistent, showing up every day, having a smile on my face, greeting people, following up with them if they've mentioned like they have a sick family member or that they're going through something, like showing them that I care enough to continue to follow up with them. If I see that they didn't show up, like seeing how they're doing, I think that whole people component goes such a long way. It's like, I'm not always able to like give them the answer that they want for certain things, right, but I'm always able to show up and be a human and treat them as a human.
Yes, showing up and being human. I think that is the biggest thing, and I think that is what is missing in a lot of companies, quite frankly, is the human side of it, because there are so many. I mean, we were talking about even here before the show, the number of deaths, and you know, there are deportations. Like, there are all of these things happening that people walk into the office with, and it's like, how can we make this environment somewhere that they feel safe? Is that even a is that a pipe dream now? In companies?
It's tough. I feel like making each and every person feel safe is like a complicated ask, but something that we should strive to do. Like, everyone should be able to show up to work and feel safe. And sometimes the answer to how to get there is not like super clear. Yeah. But I think striving for that and making sure that you're listening to people and creating that open feedback loop so that if somebody feels like they're not feeling safe, they feel comfortable enough to come and speak to you about it.
Yeah. Is there something specific at your company that you all have in place that helps people feel psychologically safe even?
Yeah, we actually have a training coming up that is called Amplifying Your Voice, and we'll be speaking and touching on psychological safety. I think that that's something that people have been asking for, and I think it's something that's very necessary. We spend most of our time at work, and so to have to come every day to a place where you don't feel just the base level of psychological safety just really impacts your ability to perform. And so it's not only to the employee's interest, but to our interest as well, to make sure that people are able to come and not have to like worry about whether they're going to get chewed out or worry about like blame culture or anything like that. And so I think being able to have a training that we can all participate in, that helps us to just start the foundation of building what psychological safety looks like, is great.
Okay. Has there been a challenge in your role, like been a big challenge that you've had to get through in your role so far?
I would say in HR, you're kind of expected to speak up on every issue that's happening. And sometimes for me, it's like I'm sometimes out of the loop. I don't even know what's happening or who's being affected by what. So I think the biggest challenge is knowing when to speak up, what to say when you are speaking up, and then how to handle when someone feels like, oh, you spoke up about this, but not this other thing. And just balancing we want to have a diverse company, and we do have diversity, but that also requires you to be very much more aware of like the different things happening in the world that it might impact your different employees.
Okay. Now, Natalia, if there are people that want to keep up with learning from you, learning your perspective, is there a way that people can actually connect with you online?
Yeah, so they can definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's probably like the best place to connect.
Okay. I'd say. All right, y'all, LinkedIn coming up next. Natalia shares the lessons she's learned along the way, the wins, the challenges, and the BS she's still pushing past.
Hold up, we're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS, right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant, and around here, we get rid of the BS.
Welcome back to Be Better Than Your BS. I'm here with Natalia Williams, and now we're diving into reflections, the lessons she's learned from her journey, and what leaders can take away to build stronger workplaces. Because leadership isn't just about strategy, it's about growth, resilience, and self-awareness. It's about the lessons now. What worked, what didn't, and what you carry forward. This is the post game, y'all. So looking back, what BS are you still working through as a leader?
I think that I'm still working through figuring out the best way to lead different types of people. I think that, and part of that is just listening and not going in with like a preconceived notion of a person or how it is that they can most effectively be led. And so I think that just takes a lot of like stepping outside of myself to listen, to learn, to appreciate different perspectives.
Okay. And I have, this question may sound like it's coming out of the left, but I always think about certain industries as being really, really fun industries to work in. Is beauty one of those, or is it really just kind of stale and buttoned up? And so.
No, actually, it's really fun, actually. I think that the beauty world in general is so much fun. I think that the fact that you have this ability to express yourself, like even when I was, before I was working here, I had to dress a certain way. I had to cover up my piercings. I had to cover up my tattoos. So like being somewhere where you can have a full sleeve, where you can have as many piercings as you want, where you can dye your hair, like those different things don't, like no one's looking down on you for that or saying you're at this level, you shouldn't be doing that, I think is exciting. Cause when you can show up as yourself and see everyone else do that, I think it just adds, you know, to flavor in the office.
Yes. What's a lesson you've learned about people that you wish every leader understood?
I've learned that people have different learning styles. And so I would always recommend that before you, when you hire somebody, before you just jump right into working with them, that you sit down and have an actual structured conversation about like, what is your learning style? How do you receive feedback? How can I tell when you're stressed? Like just learning people, I think is really important. And I don't think we do enough of that, of like sitting down and trying to learn somebody before just going into a full working relationship with them.
I love that so much. I love it so much because it's like any relationship, right? You've got to know a little bit about who you're dealing with. And I talk to leaders who they're like, I lead so many people. There's no way that I can spend time getting to know them. And I'm like, 10 minutes, even if it takes you a year. And I know you have people coming in and out, but you've got to know a little bit about the people that you're leading so that you can humanize them and humanize the things that are happening around them. Is there, are there any type of feedback channels at your place of business?
So we do like anonymous surveys, and I feel like that is really great because people feel more comfortable like actually telling you how they feel. But then we also have like open forums, like town halls, where we allow people to like ask their questions. And then we also do like smaller, like meetup groups where I think in those like smaller, more intimate groups is when people feel most comfortable being able to like speak out. And I think posing the question to people, not just saying, let me know how you're feeling about things, but like being very specific in the type of questions you're asking so that they don't feel like they're being invited to actually give you the specific feedback that you're looking for.
And what about the people who don't want to talk, who are still scared? Is there anything you could recommend for those folks?
I think anonymous surveys are the best. Like, I think that's where I see these comments come to life. And I would assume it's people who don't feel as comfortable speaking up in person. But then I also always invite people like separately on the side. You can always ping me if we were in a group setting and something came up and you didn't feel comfortable in that setting saying it, you can ping me. Also, sometimes people will like message me in a meeting and say like, I want to say this, but I don't feel comfortable saying it. And I have no problem like being the one to bring it up so that their voice is still heard.
And I agree with you. People will go off in an anonymous survey. Like they will just like write everything. And you're like, oh my gosh, like we have a real issue here.
Definitely.
Now, is there a way to measure culture beyond just the metrics and the surveys? Because I know HR is so big on surveys and the metrics and all of those things, but we're talking about people at the end of the day.
I think exit surveys are just really so informative to me because now you're talking to somebody who has nothing really to lose. And they can be very honest with you about how their experience has been. But then I think on a day-to-day measuring culture is just walking into the room. Like, what is the energy that is in the room? Are people like not speaking to people? Are people gathered in the like the common areas talking? Like, are people coming to the extra events that you're having? Do they feel like they want to be around their work people longer than they have to? So I think it's in like those daily interactions that you're really able to gauge, like, is this a place that people feel like they're having a good time coming to?
I love it. What's one people or culture practice you think every company should implement right now?
I would say what's one thing. So one thing that I really love doing with new hires is doing like a new hire fun fact sheet. And so that's a time to be able to ask them a lot of just random questions that I feel like helps you, give you color around who that person is. And then also helps to connect. Like if I'm asking, what does this first person love to do on the weekends? Mm-hmm. When someone else is reading that, they automatically have points of connection that they might have with yes. that person. So when they see that person, they have something. If they're like somebody who's like, it's awkward, like having these first time conversations, they now have something to like, oh, I saw that you like doing this. I also like doing that. And so I think it helps to kind of like speed up those like connections with our like new hire fun fact sheets.
I love having a fun fact sheet. I never thought about that. So how do you personally define your personal culture? Personal culture is the energy you walk in the room with and the impact that you leave when you walk out. How do you personally define yours? And then how do you think it shows up at work?
Yeah, I think that I try to hold myself to being accountable and dependable. So somebody that they know that they can go to get an answer from. If you don't hear from me, then there's a real problem. Like I'm pretty good at responding to people. Being trustworthy. So somebody like if you come to me and you're like, I really want to talk about this thing, but I don't want it to like, I don't want it to get back to that person, as long as it's not something that I'm legally required to like speak on, just making sure that I'm a safe space for people. And then making sure I'm kind, making sure I'm smiling, making sure that when I'm approachable, that when people are coming to my office, no matter how busy I am, that I'm taking the time to hear them out, that I'm putting people truly first. And so I would hope that that plays out in like the day to day as I'm interacting with people and that they always know what they're going to get from me.
I love that you use the word kindness. I feel like kindness is the most underrated quality or strategy in a business. It 100%. Goes so far. To be 100%. Kind and just speak to people. I would have people say all the time, I think my manager does not like me. And I'm like, why? Yeah. Well, they don't smile. They don't speak to me. And you would think at our ages that people wouldn't care as much. People really care. It really makes them feel like I got to walk on eggshells. I can't. I've done something wrong. Even if they haven't and they don't because of the power structure, they never address it. So what's the best advice you could give managers who want to build a stronger connection with their teams?
Yeah, I would tell managers to sit down with your teams outside of just regular meetings on a regular cadence. Like already set that cadence, like we're going to sit down quarterly to just get to know them better, to do team bonding. I think the times that I get to like really understand my team the best is outside of work where they get to kind of like let their guard down a little bit and show me bits and pieces of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that setting that regular cadence of like outside of work activities or going to team lunch or things like that can really help you to build that comfortability with each other.
So you're saying get out of the office, like get out of that environment so that you can actually get a chance to connect with people on a more personal level. So if your team had to describe your leadership in three words, what do you hope they would say about you?
I hope they would say that I'm supportive, that I'm kind, and that I am I am for them in the sense that like I'm always going to be somebody who's rooting for you. I'm going to try to put you in position to be, whether it's promoted, to be seen, to be heard. Somebody that's an advocate for them in their careers.
So I have to ask you, because I always used to just grimace when I saw an employee handbook, right? It's just like, you really want me to read this thing? Because and most people do not read them, but how important are employee manuals or handbooks in a company?
Yeah, so we definitely have a handbook. I think people only refer to it or read it when they need to. So it's not something that they do have to sign off to show that they've gotten it. But I don't think people actually refer to it until it's like something happens and they're like, what does the employee handbook say about this? I think on our end, the HR side, I think it's even more important to have a handbook so that when you are holding people to certain policies, you actually have something written down to hold them to.
Yes.
I think that when you don't have that, then you're, you know, then things just get muddied and it's hard to really hold people accountable.
And is yours actually updated? Like, do you update it every...
We are literally in the process of updating it now. I think that there could be a more regular cadence of updating it. And also just pushing it out, like every so often saying like, hey, here are like maybe highlighting different policies at different given times, that so that they're not overwhelmed with like the whole booklet of it. But like you're pulling out certain policies at any given time to just show people like, hey, this is here. This is a thing.
I asked because I had a client and they wanted us to go through their employee handbook and just kind of look at their policies and procedures. And I got to tell you, there was stuff in there that was women can only wear business earrings.
Yeah.
And I said, what is a business earring? What does that look like? Women can only wear business shoes and the heel had to be so many inches. And I'm like, are you really measuring the inches of a woman's shoe when they come in? And why are all of the rules about what women have to wear? Their skirts had to be so long. And I thought, this handbook has not been updated since 1965. Yeah. I didn't even know business earrings were a thing. And that's really why I asked, because when I went through it, I was just like, I think you should just chuck this whole book and start over with 2022 and go from there. Yeah. So, all right, y'all, we'll be right back. Up next, we're going into overtime, a lightning round to get to know Natalia outside of work.
Hold up, we're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS, right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant, and around here, we get rid of the BS.
Welcome back to Be Better Than Your BS. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcast? Listen to Be Better Than Your BS anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. We're closing out today's episode with some fun in our overtime lightning round. These are quick hits that give us a peek into Natalia's world outside of leadership and culture. All right, let's get to the fun stuff. People want to know about you outside of the work you do. So what is your go-to song when you need to get in the zone?
Yeah. So right now, I'm Afro-Latina. My family's from Panama. And so I would say that when I'm trying to get into the zone, I really love connecting with some Spanish artists. So right now I'm a huge fan of an artist called Beele. And so anytime I listen to his songs, I just feel like I'm back home in Panama with my family. So
wow. And so when did you leave Panama? At what age?
So I actually was born here, but I would go back to Panama every year since I was born, essentially. I'd be out there for 3 months for summer, and then we'll return for Christmas break. So it's like half the year I'm living there with my grandparents and my cousins. And so I definitely feel like I had like a dual life. Yeah. I spent most of my time here, but then also partly there in Panama.
Okay. Now, if you could only use one beauty product for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, it'd be hard to choose between lip gloss and an eyebrow pencil. It's somewhere in between those.
Eyebrows are so important. There's just not enough emphasis put on eyebrows.
Yeah. Okay.
Your favorite behind the scenes memory from working at the company you're at now?
I would say being able to work on set. So that's like obviously completely out of the realm of like what I actually do. But when I started, we were like really in our startup phase. And so it's really all hands on deck. So it doesn't really matter what you do. If like something's needed, then you're there helping out. And so being able to help out with like the shoots, whether it's like just putting my arm out for swatches or anything like that, I think that's like a really great memory.
Have you been called in to just like, let us try this makeup on your face?
Yes, 100 times. Yeah, all the time. And it's really fun. It's fun to be like the first one testing out products.
Yeah.
And feeling like you have like the inside scoop and also like a hand in giving feedback on like what works.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. If you weren't leading people in culture, what career would you be chasing right now?
Oh, this is going to sound crazy, but I think I'd be like a homemaker.
Really?
I at first, like growing up, I was always like, no, I want to be in the workforce. I want to work, work, work. And then I get to this age and I'm like, honestly, the idea of like being a stay-at-home mom and being able to just like manage my household feels so exciting to me.
Wow. So much respect, because when I think about kids, I'm like, that seems way scarier than going to work every day.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that is the biggest. It's the biggest job in the world. I mean, I consider myself the world's greatest auntie, and I had, I mean, my nephew, you could sit him down for 5 seconds and he's like, you know, you're like, sit here, I'll be right back. And he's like, went 3 or 4 places by the time you got back in 5 minutes. So I'd always tell him, not on my watch. You can't get hurt. You can't be missing, like, none of this stuff. So I really commend you for that. I think I'd be an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. I love dinosaurs and all that stuff. But anyway, what's your favorite way to recharge outside of work?
I love spending time with my husband. Like, it could be spending time doing nothing, but I really enjoy just his company. I enjoy watching a good show with him. Yeah. I feel like we really bond over the shows that we like watching. So, yeah.
I love that. And you are really a newlywed, right?
I am. I just got married back in November of 2024.
Okay.
So almost a year now. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to talk to you in 10 years. We're going to come back to this. I want you to say the same thing.
Yeah, I know. I hope I'll be saying the same thing.
No, I'm just joking. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Okay, best concert you've ever been to?
So recently, last year, we were able to go to a Burna Boy concert. So that's my husband's like favorite artist. And it was like a random concert he like last minute put on. It was announced by Kevin Hart. We go there and we have like these standing like space that we're in. Uh-huh. And we're like literally able to like reach out and touch Burna Boy. And I just would never have thought that at any point we would be that close. And so being able to see like his favorite artist that close was just like an unmatched experience.
See, and maybe it's because you're younger than me, but I've always been like this. I don't like standing for an entire concert.
Oh, I don't either. I don't either. That one was worth it. It was worth it. Okay. I was like, never again. Like, it's not my thing.
Yes. I was like, I'm going to go to an old school concert so I can sit down, dance when I want to, sit down. I hate standing.
Same.
What's something about you that would surprise people?
I think that in the workspace, what surprises people is like, I'm actually pretty like social. Like, I love being around people. I love going out and like just being in community. But I think that I could see some people thinking that I'm more reserved. Mm-hmm. But I think it just comes with the territory of like what I actually do that kind of comes across. I come across as more reserved than I actually am.
Yeah, I think HR does that. I think HR, banking, and legal, right? Yeah. Those are the three areas where people feel like they have to really, that's really buttoned up.
Yeah.
One workplace myth about HR that you wish you could shut down forever.
So anytime you go on TikTok, you always see people like, you can't trust HR, you can't trust HR. And like, I'm sure in most places you can't trust HR. I wish that overall, we could find a way to make HR more of an ally for employees so that they don't feel like they can't trust HR.
Yeah, because I think you have to walk a fine line between the people and the company, because you're really there for both. But HR gets a bad rap. I also think HR gets the rap of having to know about every single thing. It's like if it happens, you're supposed to know about it. If there's new training, you should have had it. You know, and I think it's really
unfair. I'm like, things are just coming up all the time. It's hard to keep up.
It is extremely hard to keep up. Even coming from the field that I came from, DEI, there was a new word. Like every time I turn around, somebody would say, have you heard of, I don't know, another letter in the LGBTQIA, right? And I'm like, no, what is that? You know, when the S came out, like you really have to, and people think, well, you do this, you should know. And it's like, well, it just happened yesterday. I'm trying to keep up with everything, which in reality, a lot of this stuff is older than I am, but it cycles, right? Mm-hmm. If you could trade jobs with a celebrity for one day, who would it be and why?
Mm. Good trade place with a celebrity. Maybe Kelly Rowland. I feel like she's like popular enough, but like not too popular. So I feel like she's in the spaces with other like super, super, super like big stars, but she's like a big star in her own right, but not like necessarily the biggest in the room potentially. Yes. I feel like being the biggest in the room would be a little too much for me. But I love how, like, yeah, I'm sure she has presence when she walks in the room, yeah, regardless.
So you want to be known, but you still want to go to the grocery store?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't feel like Kelly can go to the grocery store. Yeah, I don't feel like Kelly
can't. She's probably beyond that. But yeah, I still would love some sort of normalcy.
Yes, I admire. I remember seeing some posts with like Hugh Jackman, and he would just be out with his family walking down the street, and I was like, yeah, that's the way you got to do this.
Yeah,
so important. One small ritual or routine that always keeps you grounded, no matter how hectic things get. What's that thing for you?
I think for me, it's always been prayer. Like if I'm nervous about something, I have a big day coming up, I feel like being able to just pray about it and release it, and I feel so much more confident and comfortable after that, just going in and attacking the day.
I love that. I feel like I spoke yesterday and I didn't do my prayer, my little meditation stuff to get me ready for it. And there was all kinds of issues. So I'm like, you know, like what? I didn't do the routine. I didn't do the routine. That honestly had nothing to do with me. But I feel like it quiets. It just kind of quiets. It even quiets my own things inside me that keep me all over the place. Yeah. Yes, all of those things, like, you've got this. So I love, love, love that you said it. Anything else about you that you want to share with the world?
No, I think that I'm just excited to be in this space. I'm excited to add my own contribution and just continue to grow and learn from the people that I meet along the way.
Love it. Natalia, this has been incredibly valuable. Where can people, again, follow your work and continue to have a conversation with you?
Yeah, I would definitely say reaching out on LinkedIn is still, I think, the best way to continue to connect. I'm also do a lot of recruiting, so being able to connect with people that are interested in different roles and just build my network, I think, is great, so that if there's a role that comes up that someone might be a good fit for, I already have somebody in mind.
Okay, y'all, there you go. Looking for a job. Reach out on LinkedIn. Natalia, thank you so much for sharing your story, your lessons, your leadership with us today. Your journey reminds us that culture isn't built by accident. It's shaped by values, courage, and pushing past the BS that holds us back. Let's keep it real, y'all. Culture ain't some HR buzzword. It's the whole vibe. It's how folks feel when they walk through the door. Natalia broke it down. It's built in the small things, the check-ins, the shout-outs, the way you make people feel seen. So tomorrow, do something simple. Text, call, pull somebody aside and ask how they're doing. Not the work, the person. That's leadership. That's how you build trust. That's how you win. I'm Risha Grant. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Be Better Than Your BS.